Yeah, Von Rule 3.
Yeah. Not every man is brave every minute of every day. There are lapses. But I used to go on these patrols, and I was left there with a chap called Fred Fuller in Hoorn in Holland, and I was supposed to take the Yanks up. Well, I had to take the Yanks up at night. Our chaps had gone back, and up in the standard patrol was Barney Ross then with a platoon of men. And I took them up. I never heard so much noise in all my life. And I said to him, "You've got to be quiet. Germans send patrols out here." And we went through the wood yard, up to the farm. And the chap, he got onto the 38, "Down and over, Roger." I thought, "Oh, good God." And I said to Barney, "Let's get away from here quick." And I said, "Be quiet, whatever you do." Back we went to Hoorn, and we rejoined the battalion. In Ghent, we were waiting to come back to England by aircraft. We came back to England, and the next job was going to be March, the drop over the Rhine. And I was looked up by Barker, Tideman. I thought, as a seasoned soldier, which I had quite a bit of experience by now. And we took off, we're going to drop over the Rhine to a place called Wesel, W-E-S-E-L. And we took off, beautiful morning, and we were in the same aircraft, Tideman and Barker. I looked out, they're quite good chaps, they were. And all of a sudden, must have been about 10 o'clock in the morning, action stations, go, go, go. And I went to the right of DZ to some very high trees. I hit the trees. I landed upside down, hanging by my right leg, laying down with weight, and the Germans were firing the snipers through the woods, firing the Smeisers, their guns, through the woods. And I shouted out. And one chap scaled the tree. He was a Canadian, little Canadian with a moustache, a Canadian para. And he cut the rigging knives, and I hit the ground. But I'd all lost everything, you know. My mind had gone. Instead of going round the perimeter of the field to the RV, I went straight across the field with a plane coming down with a lorry load of men hitting the woods at the other end. And I got to the RV where Napier Crookenham was and waiting to advance. And we advanced up to the high ground where some Canadians were, who were pinned down by some Germans. And the Germans went to surrender when we got up there, and one German, for some unknown reason, decided to run. He got shot. He lay dead. And don't forget, we're on the high ground now, looking down on the open ground throughout the woods. Why he ran, I don't know. He must have, in my mentor, he said, "Well, I'm going to be taken prisoner. That's it. I'll try and get away." But he was dead. He laid not far from where I was, on the perimeter of the woods. And then the Germans started to ring. But that was, we got up and advanced and advanced and advanced through Germany, different places. Used to act the goon at times. We'd get in one house in Essen, I remember in Essen. And I'd be laying a bath with a top hat, no water in there, with a top hat on. I think a chap must have been a musician. Another chap came from, took a French horn out. And this was, you know, just stupidness really, but this is, you had to build your morale and be, you know, bravado and things like that. And we gradually advanced and advanced. And we used to get the German, as we advanced through the farms, they thought they were going to be shot. But what we used to do when we got to the farms, we used to, if we confiscated some eggs and potatoes, we'd make the German women cook for us before we carried on. But you carrying on, advance, advance, advance. And I remember being in one place, and we were on the edge of these woods there, the perimeter there. And Jerry didn't know we'd taken it. He was cycling along with his rifle over his back. And just as he got near, I was about 40 yards away, he must have sensed something was wrong. And he went to turn around, cycle away. He was dead. He was a goner. See? And another chap, an officer, with a section of men, Germans, tried to, you know, advance. Of course, we fired on them.
Where was that?
I don't know the name now. I don't know. But it was a place. I'll phone up sometime, let you know that. God, I never used to bother about names of places and things like that. Just advance and get on with it. There was another place where we took one night, where we was there late the one night, and we had to take this town the next morning. And to get to this town, we had to go across this narrow bridge from the flank of the town. We had to cross this little bridge, and there's a pillbox on this bridge. And I think it was McGuffey, his name, a Canadian, front of your lieutenant, ginger chap. I mean, they go split-arse formation across this bridge and lay across the other side to the where it was more secure, because the snipers were doing a lot of damage from this town. And as he ran split-arse formation, he got shot in the head, laid down. And I went, you couldn't see my backside for dust. And I crossed there, and I'd survived, laid there. And we went through this village, through this town, and it was, you were lads then, and that's it. And you go through the shops and things like that. I remember going in a haberdashery place, and there was some stockings there, so I put them in his smock. And this is so stupid, but I can talk about it now. And there's a bank opposite. I thought, oh, that's it. The sea was sitting in there. You're under fire. Cross there, put some plastic in a. Put some plastic explosive around the perimeter of this safe, and that was where the seal was. And there was about three of us in there. Blew the safe, there's not a sausage in there, nothing at all. Blew half the ceiling down. So back in action, carried on street fighting, and we dug in a cemetery, and we came under fire at this cemetery. He soon evacuated that place there, and we carried on. And from there, as I say, it was taken village by village. And I remember one place we got to, and there was a sniper walking across the field. He wasn't aware that we were there. And there was three of us. And it was toss up, who has him? If you didn't get him, he'd get you, and that's it. And we're going towards the shed. So we tossed up, and there's a little half-chap, half-caste, and he won the day, and he got him. A bit callous, I suppose, if you think about it these days, but in those days, they were there to shoot you, and you were there to shoot them. And we carried on, and we got to Wismar in the Baltic. I'm talking about isolated incidents now. We got to Wismar in the Baltic, beautiful town. And in the town there, I was a sergeant then, and I had to take a small section out patrolling to keep the peace. The Russians came in the afternoon, and they were a rabble, they were a complete rabble. And of course, we had our little celebration party. We sent out and confiscated some snaps, etc. And had our little birthday, little party, victory party. And each one had their victory party one night and one another night. But I had to patrol the streets there. And I remember the Americans were, I shouldn't say this, a ruddy nuisance of prisoner wars. And of course they'd never seen women, and you were trying to keep the peace, keep them away from women. And it's not necessary, rape was never necessary. It's stupid. I mean, if they wanted, they could go anywhere. And you had to keep the peace. I was a bloody nuisance, it was, trying to keep the peace. Of course, it wasn't long back to England. And Sergeant came and Ian Dyer said, he got to Croydon, Ian did. He said, you're going on the advance flight to India to learn jungle warfare, a few of us, to learn jungle warfare and teach the men when they come out, when they go out there. So back to England, and in those days, Robbie was taken prisoner of war, by the way, and escaped. That one I told you about previously in this tape. And he said, how much money do you want? I said, I'll have £75. I never had £75 in credit. A lot of men died in debt. Then I had a bit of booty, a couple of typewriters and binoculars to German, and I sold them for £75. I had £2 or £3. So I was on leave, and 150-odd pounds, which is a lot of money those days. You could have bought a property, a small terraced house in those days for that. Anyhow, going to India, I think it was 3 years. What's money? Money's no good to me. So I had a whale of a time, and I went back with £3. Went to India, got to Bombay, on the boat going out, Mepocrine tablets, mosquitoes, talking about mosquitoes and things like that. When we got to India, there was no mosquito nets or anything. But I never got bitten once in India. In Normandy, of course, ground swamps and things like that, I got bitten like bilio. You think I was a bugler's fighter, it came out worse. But in India, I never got bitten once. Of course, fortunately, they dropped the bomb. And then we were sent to Palestine. It was there I was offered a commission in 45. But I said, what does it involve? They said, well, you'll have to go back to India. I said, no thanks. Anyone could earn a commission out in India. So I stayed there. They made me sergeant mess caterer, which was a whale of a job. Lovely that was. Good job that was.
Where was this in Palestine?
Palestine. Castina. They gave me an empty building. He says, Sergeant Cayman, it's your mess. But I built it up into a good mess. And, of course, Paul was still with us, Paul Greenway, later the Lord Greenway, lovely man. He used to swear with a plum in his mouth. But he said, he's got a platoon of men here, I want him back. I said, that's it. But then came our D-mob, trade release.
Did you see any of the trouble in Palestine?
Oh, yes, a ruddy nuisance. I had no time. Really, in those days, I thought the Jews could have been more understanding. Don't forget we'd gone right through a battle. They're a bit naughty when you talk about the Stern Gang. I was very naughty of them to start attacking the British, hanging the British. Afterwards, when I left there, some of them were hung. And I think it was a bit naughty to come, you know, what they'd gone through, and can't then start attacking British people. Don't forget that we're only there to keep the peace. It's a bit naughty. And I've never forgotten that. I thought to myself, well, they could have, you know, their freedom. They got their freedom. And we were only there to keep the peace. So my D-mob came through. And Paul Greenway turned around and said, stay here, he said. Look, he's got a platoon of men. And he tried to convince me to stay. I said, no, I liked England. Perhaps if I'd been back in England, I might have considered it. And that was the end of my war.
In what?
That was the end of my war. So that's it.
What does split arse formation mean?
Anyway. Slap happy.
How do you feel now about having served with the Paras in the war?
Great thing they're going. Their best friends are going. If you found 10 bob in those days, you'd share it. We still keep touch. You'll find I'll show it to you in a minute, a card there to Brigadier Hill. And they still write to me, Napier. Some have, you know, a lot have gone by the wayside. friend of mine who was on the gliders, the one landed back in England, Arthur Mobsby. Took him out the same day, in spite of crash landed in England. Now he's had cancer. He's had his stomach taken away. We phone each other each week, twice, sometimes twice a week. They phone me. When that phone goes on, that phone will go. But we had a good comradeship. Ron Tucker, you can gamble that phone will go 9:30 tomorrow morning. Ron Tucker, George Bosher, the phone will go. John Britton. We had two dogs, by the way, supposed to jump with us. And one, he couldn't go because his feet trouble, poor trouble. But Glenn, he got killed, his handler. He'd jumped with us.
In Normandy?
Yeah, he jumped with us in Normandy and he got killed on the 6th of June. With Emil Cortel. We used to call him Jack Cortel. They both got killed on the 6th of June. He also had two pigeons for success. One was carried by an officer, and one was carried by John Britton. And
so this dog who jumped in Normandy, he was just a mascot?
Oh, no, he's a sniffer. Sniffer dogs sort the germs out. He's a good dog, he was, Glenn. I've got a photo of him on YouTube.
Did he prove of much use sniffing?
Pardon?
Did he prove of much use detecting Germans?
Well, he couldn't hear. He was killed by an aircraft bombing, I think. So I'm led to believe. Shame, isn't it?
You were telling me about the pigeon.
Yeah. Jimmy Loring had a pigeon. That was the officer. And he released it. It got back to England. John Britton had a pigeon, but he landed in the water. A lot of other blokes were drowned and unaccounted for. John Britton landed in the water and he had to release it. Just open the end of the container and release it. He don't know what happened to that.